It's hard. It's difficult. But
Michelle,
anyway.
This is Fargo. We're shifting gears, maybe grinding gears a little bit. Sorry that was fast.
That's okay. I need to.
But this is Fargo. It's all based on the Coens. Well, let's describe it a little bit. My name is Mike. I'm here from West Coast Project, and I'm here with Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
Where are you from?
Tennessee.
West Coast Project, Michelle, too. But yeah, we're here doing Fargo. This is our second season of Fargo. And Fargo, of course, is based on the Coens idea. There was a little bit of interesting thing in the Coens movie Fargo, Michelle, where they say this is a completely true story.
Right.
That is supposedly a joke. It's obviously not completely true. But the plot is based on... The Coens actually say this, that the plot of the movie is based on real things that happened. Although not word for word and verbatim, but some of those crimes actually happened in Minnesota and in Fargo.
So did they happen? Because they put that in a lot of their stuff, and it's just part of the movie, right?
I think it's the genesis. I think it's true in the sense that the genesis of their idea is based on true events that they read about or they learned about in history, and then they fictionalized them and made stories from them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure somebody at some point's gotten kidnapped in that area, in Fargo, maybe that area. But, you know, they put it down like it's a true story, and then I remember you told me way back when that that's just part of their shtick.
It's kind of a quasi-joke. It's not word-for-word true, but, you know, yeah, somewhere in time, somebody probably kidnapped their own wife and held their own wife ransom from the father-in-law for money. You know, kind of the plot of Fargo.
Sure.
But there's a difference between the show Fargo and the movie Fargo. The Coen brothers seem to me, they look at life pretty bleakly. They have a kind of a black humor about life. Like, life's a giant, cruel joke to everybody. You know, at the end of which is a giant sword waiting to come down and chop our heads off. Right? And Noah Hawley, the writer of the show Fargo, I actually read this somewhere, that he has a simplistic worldview. That inside the house, there's a warm fire, and outside the house, there's an evil wolf lurking, waiting for you.
Well, he was an author first, right?
Yeah, he's a writer.
Yeah, and
still is
now,
a writer. He's a writer. Well, you mean an author versus a TV?
I thought he was. I thought I read that. I'm not sure if that's true or not. But I don't know. It kind of goes back to the affair saying, you know, about how it's hard to love a writer because they live in like their own secrets or their own, I don't know, something like that. It just reminded me of that when you said it.
They have equal amounts of evil, though. I mean, the guy putting the other guy in the wood chipper in the movie, it's pretty evil, but also dropping a guy through the ice fishing hole while he's still alive, it's pretty bad too.
Yeah, I mean, it's all bad, but the movie and the TV show, I didn't know how they were going to do that. I couldn't figure out how they could possibly make an anthology and make it... Well, remember, we didn't know if it was even going to be exactly the same, like their take on the exact show. But then it wasn't. I mean, of course, it was very different. But it really stood alone. And I can't find a whole lot, honestly, about season two. It seems like they're keeping, other than just the general plot, seems like it's kept pretty tightly under wraps, but people are certainly at least guessing that it's going to be even better than season one based
on... Four screeners are released. Everybody that's looked at them has said it's great.
Yeah.
And the only thing Fargo has to fear, I think, is True Detective Season 2.
Exactly.
But people are going to think, oh, here we go again. This show, if this ever happens like True Detective Season 2, it's going to be a flop.
Well, it gave anthologies a bad name, kind of. I agree.
But, I mean, you got to give it a chance before you say it's going to be True Detective Season 2. But anyway, yeah. I got a synopsis of it, Michelle.
Okay.
It's set in Luverne, Minnesota.
Yeah.
This is from the Wikia of Fargo. Luverne is a small town east of Sioux Falls. Sioux Falls, I think, is south of Fargo.
Okay.
I don't know. Is Fargo in North Dakota or South Dakota? I want to look that up. Sioux Falls is a little south of Fargo and is in South Dakota. And the time frame of this is the winter of 1979.
Yep.
We're going to meet 33-year-old Lou Salverson, who was Keith Carradine last year. And he's just come back from his service in Vietnam. And, of course, his daughter was Molly Salverson, the sheriff. She's 4 years old in this.
Right. And so probably not the same character.
And we're going to... No, I'm sure it's not. And we're going to see Mrs. Salverson, who I don't think we ever met.
No, and she's ill. She's dying, correct? Of cancer, I think.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think I read that.
And this story is around this thing that they referred to in Season 1, the Sioux Falls incident.
Right.
That Lou talked about. And they say in this synopsis that it's based on the Coen brothers' movie Fargo, their movie Miller's Crossing, and The Man Who Wasn't There. Now, Miller's Crossing was a really cool movie, too. I didn't like The Man Who Wasn't There so much, but I did really like Miller's Crossing. Also very dark, very Fargo-like from the Coens.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, do you have any thoughts about that? Do you have anything to add to that synopsis?
Well, the only thing that I read, and you may have been going to go into it and haven't yet, but it's about two families, right? The Gearhards and the Bloomquists. And the Gearhards are like a local crime family. And somehow the Bloomquists, they cross paths with them. And that's what the bloody mess of everything.
Yeah, it's a Minnesota gang versus a Kansas City gang.
I did read that it was filmed in Calgary again, though, in Canada.
Yeah, I think all the first
one was filmed
there. I'm sure if you go to Calgary, it looks just like Fargo.
Yeah.
Kind of Midwestern Canada, Midwestern U.S.
And the first one is named Waiting for Dutch. And if you'll remember back in Season 1, all of the titles were parables or most were parables, all had meaning. I couldn't find anything about that. Did you find anything about the first?
No, but this is chock full of parables.
Okay.
It's got the tale of Sisyphus and the gift of the Magi, right, and the before the law, the Kierkegaard, right, and Kafka, these European philosophers. It's very, very rife with philosophy and quasi-religion almost.
What? Is there only going to be 7 episodes?
No, there's 10.
There is 10. Okay, because the only 7 were named that I could find, so.
Yeah, there's 10. Runs through December 14th. Okay. Starts on Tuesday, October 12th. Or Monday, October 12th. So we're going to do our podcast on Tuesdays.
Okay.
So look for them either late Tuesdays or Wednesdays on your feed. Yeah, so Michelle, let's talk a little bit about, unless you have anything to add to the kind of the general theme. How about some of the characters?
It's got quite the cast of characters, honestly. I mean, it's hard to compete with Billy Bob Thornton to me. It's like, you know, trying to compete with McConaughey and that. But I'm kind of excited about it. I think that it could really be good.
Patrick Wilson is Lou Salverson, the young 33-year-old Lou Salverson. He was in Watchmen. I don't know that much about him, but I'm sure they're picking the prime, perfect people for each of these roles. I don't know that much about that. Patrick Wilson. Ted Danson is Lou Salverson's father, I think.
Father-in-law, I think, and he's the sheriff. Yeah, because he's Larson, and his name would have to be Salverson if it was Lou's father.
So he's in it, Ted Danson. Jean Smart, I didn't watch Designing Women. She's in Designing Women and Frasier, the Brady Bunch movie. She's They say her name is Floyd Gerhardt, so she's part of the crime family, but Floyd is her first name.
Okay. I didn't... That's weird.
She asserts her power when her husband falls ill. So Jean Smart. Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
She's a hairdresser.
Yeah, she's the Plemons. She's on the other side of the family, right?
Yeah, she's with Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
Wife or girlfriend or something.
Wife, I think. Yeah, she's the Bloomquist family. She's, who was she, Spider-Man's girlfriend?
Yeah, I think so. And she was in Jumanji and Bring It On and a couple other movies. Kirsten Dunst. So, of course, then Jesse Plemons, Breaking Bad, Friday Night Lights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's her husband. A butcher's assistant who spends most of his free time helping his wife with whatever she needs. Sounds like a good husband, huh?
Yeah. Pretty nice.
But he's a dope. I think he's supposed to be kind of a slow-witted dope like he's been in Friday Night Lights and in Breaking Bad.
I didn't see him in Friday Night Lights, but it's going to be interesting to see him and see if he is the same character as he was in Breaking Bad. Because he had a really good role in that. It was always interesting to see him.
Yeah, I guess he's gotten over what's her name.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of her name.
Lydia?
Lydia, yeah.
Thought he's going to be pining for her for a while. Nick Offerman? Nick Offerman's kind of a conspiracy theorist in the show from Parks and Recreation. He looks really funny.
I bet there's going to be some dark comedy. What do you think?
No, not from the Coens.
Yeah.
Brad Garrett. Brad Garrett's kind of the guy, and everybody knows Raymond. He's the kind of a smart-ass, dumb-ass brother-in-law or brother. And he's part of the Kansas City crime group in this Fargo season. Brad Garrett. Sorry, just picking these out. So Kieran Culkin was in a couple things I'm not too familiar with, but he's part of Gene's... He's part of one of the crime families in this season. I don't know, who else? Who are we missing? Bokeem Woodbine. He was on The Rock. He looks like kind of a hitman, and I've seen a couple of previews of this. He looks like he's kind of a hired hand, hired gun hitman. But I don't know. I don't know that much about him yet. Jeffrey Donovan, he'll play the oldest son, Dodd, of the Gerhardt family, who isn't the easiest person to deal with.
Yeah, and he was in Burn Notice and... Couple things.
I trust the people to be have been put into the right role. So, you know, I don't care. I don't need previews of who they are, what they're going to do. They're just going to, I think it's just going to flow. If Noah Hawley writes it like he did last season, it's all just going to flow the way it should.
Yeah, I can't. I don't even worry about it. It's just like you said, I just completely trust that everybody's going to be perfectly cast because that's what they've shown us. Pretty big shoes to fill. But as far as anything else goes, you know, other than the people who have actually got to see it, got to preview it, they've got just like a couple of really small trailers out and they don't really tell you anything. And it just feels like everything's really been kept under wraps a lot. Especially, you know, differentiating it from The Affair, which we just started doing too. And you could just find tons and tons and tons of information on that. And on this, it's just, I don't know, it feels really hush-hushed.
Well, we do know 7 of the titles. So Waiting for Dutch, like you said, is the first one. I couldn't find anything on that either. It might just be a guy named Dutch that they're waiting for.
Yeah, maybe.
Before the Law is the second episode, and that's kind of the parable of the gatekeeper.
Right.
I believe it's the Kierkegaard, that's the Kafka. There's a Kafka parable, Kafka story, about a gatekeeper who just says, you can't go in there, you can't come past me. And the guy who's trying to get past him is intimidated and stops. and it's kind of the power of his being and his persuasion just keeps this person from passing.
Right.
So, the third one is Sisyphus, which is the guy. No, I'm sorry. Third one's Sisyphus. The myth of Sisyphus, the guy who rolls the rock up the hill and is doomed for eternity to have it roll right back down to the bottom every time.
I don't even know that one. You skip number two, though, the Before the Law. That's the only one that they've said for sure is going to be directed by Noah Hawley.
No, that's the gatekeeper. That's the guy at the...
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. You're right. But that's the only one I actually meant to say, though, that's going to be directed for sure by Noah Hawley. And it's going to be interesting to see which ones we like better based on who they're directed by, if we can even tell a difference.
Sisyphus is a philosophical essay by Albert Camus. And it's the guy who has to roll the boulder up the mountain over and over again. It's very parable-like, very philosophical. Like, does it matter if something I do is meaningless? Is it absurd to keep going, to just do it over and over if it's going to require me to just do the exact same thing again? Kind of like this podcast. Michelle, you're not tossing much in here.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I don't know that one.
Well, you know about how you feel about that. Like, what if your job was to go pick up things that the wind would blow right back every evening and you'd have to do it all, you know, just what if your life had a routine that had no meaning, no progress, that just kind of meant you did it over and over? Is life still worth living?
Well, I mean, who's to say what someone else's life is worth?
Well, that's the prompt. It's a prompt to get you to think about that. And...
Right. But, I mean, you know, who's to say what quality of life is to another human? But, yeah, I mean, I could see how that would be depressing at best and would make you question...
Fear and Trembling is number four, and that's a novel by Kierkegaard. And Kierkegaard was like a student of Kafka, or Kafka was a student of Kierkegaard. I can't remember which is which, but they were kind of colleagues, I think. Or he studied him or something, but they're both philosophers that kind of were connected to each other. And Fear and Trembling is a religious reference from the Philippians 2, chapter 2, verse 12. Let's see what it means here. It's about when Abraham was told by God to take his son Isaac and take him up the mountain and sacrifice him, his only son, as proof that you are devoted. So Abraham had a choice to complete the task or refuse to comply with God's orders.
Yep.
And there's something in there that, because he didn't tell anybody about this struggle, Abraham's silence about the struggle, he made himself higher than the normal other mortal beings, that it was a hard thing to do. I think that's the take on it.
That's the take in relation to the episode, you think?
No, well, I don't know anything about the episode. We haven't seen it, but yeah. That's a take. That's the novel by Kierkegaard, that you have a choice, and if you suffer courageously on your own and not burden other people with it, you're of a higher status.
Yeah, that's some pretty deep stuff we're talking about, though. You know, I mean, as far as I could read what somebody else says about it, but to have my own, you know, thoughts on it and everything, I would have to really think about it. And to think about it in relation to a TV show, when you're talking about something as heavy as this topic is kind of...
Well, there's no right or wrong answer. I mean, Sisyphus, I could see somebody considering that suicide. Like, this is just mundane torture every day. I have to do it. It's hard. It's really grueling. And then at the end of the day, it's all going to come rolling back down. I got to start over completely.
Yeah, but isn't that kind of like, oh, what's that show? It's a Wonderful Life, right? Because, I mean, it's not exactly the same, but what you said kind of reminds me of that, in that you feel like the things that you do don't matter and they have no significance to everybody else. And sometimes, you know, people feel like that they might be better off if that everybody around them that they love might be better off if they just weren't even there. And then you're shown how things would have actually been if you really weren't there.
Yeah, so, but I see the myth of Sisyphus as kind of a different degree of that. Like, just simply roll George, whatever his name was, with his family, thought his actions were not meaningful. But clearly they were, you know, doing his little job every day and helping his kids grow up. And that's different than rolling a boulder up a hill only to see it roll back down.
Right.
That's a little bit different. Number five, Michelle, is the gift of the Magi, or Magi, which is the, of course, everyone knows, the two people who love each other so much that the guy sells his watch to give his beautiful bride the combs for her beautiful hair. And she cuts her beautiful hair to give him a chain for his beautiful watch. And they both don't know it. And so they give each other these gifts and they end up with kind of meaningless gifts. But it's an interesting exchange.
Oh, it's not meaningless. It's the most meaningful of all.
The physical use of the combs aren't going to be there any longer. And the chain isn't needed any longer. So it's meaningless in that sense.
They did a episode of this on Little House on the Prairie. I encourage everybody to look it up.
Yeah, so we don't have to grind our way through this. Rhinoceros is number six. And did you do this? No, I didn't. No, you did it is number seven. And they don't show us what 8, 9, and 10 are.
Right.
So that's it for our preview. Michelle, do you have any other thoughts about it? What do you expect? Do you expect a happy ending or what?
Yeah, overall, do I expect a happy ending? I do, because we know that Lou continues on, because we've seen that. We know that Molly continues on. So whatever we see, we know at least that part is going to continue. But as far as Lou's wife, like I said, I read that she has cancer in this episode. And I don't know if she actually, or in this season, I don't know if she actually dies or what. But, you know, we know that we have that bleakness to look forward to. And then the little clips that they have shown us so far of the guys, you know, the violence and stuff, that we know everybody's certainly not going to make it out. So a happy ending, I don't know that there's really almost such a thing in Coen Brothers. What do you think?
Do you think season one had a happy ending?
Yeah, I thought season one was happy. I mean, the people that you rooted for did okay. They came out okay. But it was tough getting there.
You weren't rooting for Lester's wife? You weren't rooting for Malvo?
Not Malvo so much. Lester's wife got a little more than she maybe should have for her
both nagging. Of them, even the second wife.
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
How about that guy in the ice fishing hole?
That poor guy. That was rough.
Yeah you're right, though. It's kind of a happy ending where Colin Hanks shot the wolf, shot Malvo, and kind of protected the family.
Yep. Yeah, and then you see Molly pregnant and Lou's happy, and I don't know.
It had some sadness, though, because the supermarket king's kid was fished to death.
Well, that's just it. There was a lot of sadness in the whole thing. So
it seemed like it was resolved, though. Like, it seemed like Malvo was taken care of. Like, he wasn't left as an Anton Chigurh haunting and hunting the world with more evil. He was kind of eliminated.
Right. Right, which was good. I don't think anybody felt sadness over that, probably.
Yeah, so we'll see. Well, I hope it just measures up. Season 2 sounds like it's going to. If people have seen 4 of the 10, It's got like 100% Rotten Tomatoes ranking, and people have all raved about it so far.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. It's going to be a lot of new characters to learn, too. We got a lot of names and stuff to learn. It's two whole families worth of names, and then their wives and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to take a little bit of studying, I think, to get all that down.
Yeah, no kidding. And some Kafka and Kierkegaard, Michelle. Get out your philosophy books.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
It's only 1843. Kierkegaard's good reading.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Well, it couldn't be any worse than Rashomon, could it?
Oh God.
Could it?
That was genius. All right, Michelle from Tennessee. How do people reach you if they want to argue with you about Rashomon?
At Michelle from TN on Twitter.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets on Twitter. And this is West Coast Project for Fargo. We're kind of slugging our way through this. We'll be better when we see a real episode. So yeah. Come back and watch us and listen to us, and we'll discuss in full on Tuesday.
I look forward to it.
All right, Michelle. See you then.
See you then.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.